Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And it, just so you understand, that debt is fraud. It is all been perpetrated upon you and I by a government that has been spending money on things they have no authority to spend money on. This is why we go through and why the enumerations of the Constitution are literally those authorities that they have. In other words, if they take privileges without the authority, it is fraud. Now, there are things, and, you know, as a matter of fact, we just, you know, going through the Whiskey Rebellion, we're going to get into the end of that after today's show. And actually, just to be clear, I apologize not having time to get this show done for yesterday. So we ended up having to rebroadcast the first show, the first interview with Jerry yesterday. So we basically played it twice in a row, and I apologize. It's just that I've been very, very busy in getting other content recorded and in mentoring and doing a lot of other things. So I know that as a good Christian-based listening group that I have, I know you'll forgive me. So moving forward, today we're actually taking the next step and going a little further through this tour of the states and the party's control of the states' access for you or anybody to get into public office. What we're trying to do is we're trying to help you understand that we definitely need money. We need to get the message out. And the most important thing that anybody can do is getting a lot of volunteers to actually get out, start knocking on doors and helping everybody understand who the best candidate and why they're the best candidate and the true champion of the Constitution. In all of America today for the 2026 election, Jerry Wistron stands alone in being the champion at a state level, yet alone a federal level. So therefore, as we, you know, move through this process, we want to disclose to you, you know, these conditions that Jerry is having to deal with. And so we kind of have been laying that out. And so I don't want to kind of bleed into that interview. We've just got about a half a minute left. And then we'll go straight into the interview. We'll wrap up on the back end of that with a few more comments so that we can kind of close up where we are in presenting this information. Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. And once I think you hit, once you have this information, once you hear this, I think it will help you get more involved. If there's ways you can work with us so that we can start, I do not want your money. We need money to be going into these causes.
Welcome back, folks. And we've Jerry Wistron. And Jerry, welcome back. We were talking.
And so with that, let me just kind of stop myself here before I bleed into the interview.
Welcome back, folks, and we've actually got Jerry Wistron. And Jerry, welcome back. We were talking a lot about the Missouri Party. As a matter of fact, we were even brokering the idea of the Uniparty, and you were kind of let's just summarize where we were or what we covered regarding the party so that we can continue on this train of thought, because, folks, the whole point and the whole purpose is to help you understand how hard, almost impossible it is for the best candidate to ever get into that final push in an election, to be able to actually have their name on the ballot. They want to make sure that the people they control are on that ballot, not the best candidate. And so Jerry has this insurmountable Mount Everest he has to climb. And in so doing, then we kind of covered all of this. So just go back to yesterday's show, and you can hear, you know, what brought us to today. But go ahead and let's kind of summarize where we were kind of covering off this primaries and the open party primaries and so forth. So I'll let you kind of cover this so that we can kind of just move forward. Go ahead.
Okay. We just recently in Missouri a few years ago put down where we're not registering with a party affiliation, but we can indicate in a preference. Doesn't really mean anything, but it's not used for the actual selection of ballot when people go to the primary elections. You actually make your declaration when you get there. It's a fully open primary, and so you just declare what ballot you want to vote on, Democrat, Republican, Constitution Party, Libertarian. You just make your selection at the voting poll. And so it's not required that you are affiliated. You're just making a statement of which ballot you want to choose. And because of that, it's been tendency in the past where the Democrats have pretty well decided their candidates prior to the actual primary through their local committees and state caucus. They're basically already pre-selected before the primary. So there's not a major need for the Democrats to actually vote. They're not making a notable selection that has any effect. And so they have the opportunity to grab whatever ballot they want. And often, I shouldn't say often, it's been noted that they do grab the Republican primary ballot, and they either select the candidate that they think is the actual worst in successfully winning the general election, or they vote for somebody that strongly leans in their direction anyway. So it totally skews the results of the Republican primary. And that's how we got our current governor. He's stated as being a Republican governor, but he spent all his time during the primaries campaigning with the Democrats and did not even show up for the Republican gubernatorial debate. Mm-hmm. And we had a three-way race, and it was pretty much evenly divided until then. You get all the Democrats voting, and since Governor Keel was emphasizing with them, a lot of them took the Republican ballot and voted for him. And so the Republicans really didn't have their choice. The Republican Party members didn't have their choice in the ballot because the Democrats skewed the results.
Right. So let me just inject one thing. Because there's states that use caucuses, and the caucuses are basically for the party. In other words, folks, it's a star chamber. And so when we really look at our election system, the voters, you, the voter, have kind of allowed them to go into this direction of creating star chambers and or a costly primary. Instead of allowing the election to be an open and free election all the way to the general. In other words, in a caucus, they know better. They want to make sure that the person that's moving forward, that they will allow to have their name, is going to be, you know, X or these people and only these people. Therefore, they basically determine the outcome for you. This is all about control. And I want to help you understand this, folks. They can't do this. The Democrats can't get away with having that level of control without the Republican help. And the Republicans can't get away with their level of control without the Democrats' help. In other words, they have a mutually agreed upon, let's call it rules of engagement, to ensure that they maintain control. So I'm done injecting. I just want everybody to understand caucuses. A lot of people think caucuses are the solution. Hold on here. I know we're a Republican form of government, but the party does not represent the people. if you look at how many people are registered members, not registered voters, voters is the pool of people that identify with a given party. That doesn't mean they're a member. That doesn't mean that they're engaged and have a vote and say on what the party is doing. That usually costs time. That costs money, what have you, for you to be a member of the party. The party is just a bunch of zealots that have nothing better to do than figure up and concoct ways of controlling government better so that they get the outcome that they need. This is a perfect opportunity for globalists to ensure their outcome. I mean, when you've got trillions of dollars on the line, then you want to make sure you're going to get your outcome, especially when we're talking trillions of dollars at loss. If America broke free from the globalists and we actually went down the path that was best for America, well, folks, it's all over. The globalists would lose their trillions. They'd lose us and their control over the world. Anyway, so I apologize for injecting. I just want to make sure that people kind of understood these little, what we'll call these different paths that the party plays in, these little chambers that they work with in controlling the outcome. So forgive me.
Just basically that the parties are more or less deciding how the results are going to be significantly by the Democrats being able to inject into the Republican primaries. The Democrats are pretty well all decided before the primary, so the primary isn't really all that significant for them because they've, through local committees, have decided who's going to be their candidate for each of the positions. And so the primary opens up their opportunity to interject in the Republican primary and skew how the results are going to be. The Democrats either vote for someone that they think is least likely to win, so basically putting a weak candidate in for the general election on a Republican ballot, or they vote for somebody who thinks along their lines in the first place and they get their candidate in both on the Democrat side and the Republican side. And so that's how we've gotten our current quote-unquote Republican governor, because he spent all his time during the primaries campaigning with the Democrats, not the Republicans, and then did not even show up for the Republican gubernatorial debate. It was a three-way race with him and two other candidates, and it would have been very tough for him to come through without the Democrat help. And so that's makes it hard with their agreement and working together to get any kind of minor party efforts, and they limit the access to the ballots.
Right. So if I could kind of just wrap this up, as I see this, the parties have created, because throughout the states, folks, you may be dealing with caucuses, you may be dealing with primaries. Either way, these have been concocted schemes, these have been concocted, I'll just say, little pots that the party has created so that they can maintain a level of control. Again, the last thing they want is all of the candidates to actually get out, campaign, and go to the general election. Now, everybody thinks to themselves, you know what? That would be chaos if we actually, at the end of a general election, had an outcome where, you know, we just had all of these top-end players. If that's the case, then other states deal with that with what they call what? A runoff election. If you don't have a clear runaway guy that wins in this particular seat or that particular seat, and you got to create the level of doing that, then you need to have a runoff with the last four candidates if you had a field of 40. Does that make sense? But bottom line, this is how you actually get all of the issues out. You get everybody to talk, and you actually get to go through and vet fully vet the different candidates instead of letting them tell you this is our guy. I mean, look at how the Democrats have put up idiots. Look at Harris as a presidential nominee and going into the election as a presidential, you know, candidate for the Democratic Party. She was an idiot. Biden was an idiot. It's all about handling the idiot from the rest of the way forward, not by allowing all of this. Is one of the reasons why the Electoral College was where we elected the individuals who understood who these candidates were, and that's how we had usually the best presidents being selected. Usually. There were, you know, there's always been games and intrigue, but bottom line, folks, right now it's all about control. So this control comes at a cost. And as I see this, it costs us a lot of money for the party to maintain this level of control. Don't you agree with that? I mean, as an auditor, what is the cost of a primary? Do you know what the cost of the Missouri primary was in the 2024 election?
No, but I know it was quite significant.
There you go.
And then we still had the general on top of that. So
right. And so, but the primary only serves the party to downselect. And so who pays? All of the taxpayers pay for that. I believe that the party should pay for that. I believe that the two parties, out of their membership dues, ought to pay for having that election. How does that sound? Instead of making the taxpayers pay for the primary. And, oh, by the way, if you want to vote in the Republic, then you have to pay a poll tax. If they want to share the love, they don't want to cover the full cost, then if you want to be a Republican, you would have to pay a poll tax to actually vote. That's, you know what, that's how they did it before, right? The early elections, you had to pay a poll tax. So, as I look at, you know, the Republican, the Uniparty, it is nothing but trenches and warfare against individuals and against ideas that do not fit their narrative and what they're packaging, period. So what you're going through is literally it's political warfare. So as you know, as we kind of covered this ad nauseum, I think one of the things I think everybody's takeaway should be, we need to start demanding that we stop paying for all these elections, that we actually simplify it. Because going back to have you ever done the audit on or looked at the cost of a paper ballot election at precincts versus or polling places where, you know, within precincts, where, you know, that cost versus these newfangled computer elections cost? Have you ever done the comparison on that?
I have not looked at details, but uh-huh. There's been a group nationwide and in the state as well.
Okay.
That has gone and showed that it's effective. It can be run efficiently, and it actually is cheaper, although they claim it's not because they're already sunk costs into the electronic systems and maintenance and use of those. And so, well, we're already into that, so we can't change. It's like, yeah, well, it is a sunk cost. So you either realize it and move on, or you're holding everybody into it because it's easier to maintain the status quo and it gets the processes that you want.
Yeah, but so I believe that the foolproof election is the one that is done with chisel and hammer and slate or paper and pencil. That's the cheapest because it's a foolproof, by the way. If we get hit with an EMP, if for some reason there is cyber attacks or what have you, sun flares, and the network and everything goes down, that doesn't mean that we couldn't have had an election. We just don't need, and in using a system to becoming dependent, we used to be able to determine the outcome of an election by the time each of the poll places closed. Each of the poll places. Go ahead.
It still can be done with paper ballots. They've already proven that point by running trials in, say, Osage County in Missouri. Basically, what happens is you run the ballots in batches, and you have teams that count the ballots after you seal up a batch after an hour or so. Then you just change out into a new batch, and that batch that's completed can be totally reviewed.
Yeah.
And also, it provides a paper trail. Missouri does require a 5% review for quality control to make sure that the recorded election results are what was coming from each of the, the 5% of the polls, that the results are comparable.
Yes.
It's not so easy to do with the computer system, and plus retention to come back to it in case there's a challenge is much more difficult if it's all electronic and not on paper ballots.
So let me ask you a question really quick. What is a precinct in Missouri? What's the size of a precinct in Missouri?
It's usually,
1,200, 1,500. It's usually less than 2,000.
Something like that, yes. Okay. I'm not sure, but
okay.
That is basically how we're broken up. I mean, we have in Jackson County, in instance, where I come from, we have quite a few. They're usually in community areas. Several to each township or city area.
What I'm trying to get to is, in the old days, precincts was the basis of how you voted. You didn't go to another precinct. You voted in your precinct. If you had to go, or you couldn't vote in your precinct and you had to vote somewhere else, you got a provisional ballot, which means that your whole ballot is in question until it's proven that you're a legitimate voter citizen. So a provisional ballot means it goes sits on the shelf, which is why everybody votes in their home precinct, because your name is on the list, you're registered, you've got your ID, and boom, you're done.
Yeah.
Right?
We are required to vote in our own precincts. If you're not voting absentee, you have to vote in your precincts.
Right.
And with the redistricting that we went through in 2022, there was a bit of confusion.
Right.
And so people went to precincts that they thought were theirs, and they were not on those poll lists.
Right.
So they were told to go to a different location.
So it's easy. Everybody wants to talk about the elections. And as a matter of fact, I want to kind of break away from this. What I want to get back to is the fallacies of the party and the real problems with the party. And I think one of the big elephant in the room that we need to cover is these fundamental aspects of the party that is all about making people feel good, but has no tangible, it's just hard for me to say this. And one of the things I'm talking about is the platform. The platform is just a bunch of platitudes. The platform is not a succinct ideology or a succinct idea of something very specific. In other words, conservative is one of these other ambiguous terms. The platform basically utilizes conservative ideals and applies them to how the party feels. But it is ineffective in truly laying out what the party needs to do. In other words, it doesn't deal with the elephant in the room. It just makes you feel good about the elephant in the room. And I'll say it this way, because when we look at the two parties and we look at education on the two parties, the conservative party, the Republican Party, wants to, restore a good moral curriculum in educating the children. A progressive party, the Democratic Party, wants the kids to, have a progressive education, one that's, what they would want to call liberal, but everybody else would just call it evil. So what we're looking at is two parties with the same platform plank regarding education, and both of them fail to actually talk about the elephant in the room. The question isn't what the curriculum should be. The question should be, does this government that we're talking about, if it's a federal government, does the federal government have the authority to even be involved in education? If they don't have the authority, then this is the platform. This is the succinct platform. If the federal government does not have the authority to be involved in what they're doing, they must stop immediately. If the state government does not have the authority in anything and everything that they're doing, then they must stop whatever that thing is until they have the authority. If we had a platform that literally laid it out to say, hey, don't worry about what they're doing and whether you want them to do it that way or not. You have to challenge the authority of what they're doing. Do they have that authority? Does that make sense?
Yes.
There we go. So I believe that the way the parties have created this platform, it makes everybody feel good. Oh, well, abortion's a sin. This is absolutely wrong. It's evil in the eyes of God. But didn't God give us this Constitution? Of course he did. In the Constitution, he didn't have to deal with, using any language like sin. What he did was he dealt with enumerations. We listed what they could do. So if it's not listed, then they can't do it. We've just solved the problem of abortion. You can't be involved. You can't take our money for it. You can't spend money on it. You can't be involved in it, federal government. Done. Now let's look at the state. Now, Missouri just actually had a constitutional amendment. The problem is that the constitutional amendment was done via a democracy, not via a Republican form. And we've talked about this. So the point is that we want to get into, when we start talking about government and platforms, if we allow the parties to get us engaged into arguments and discussions about emotions, every time we boil it down and actually have to fight this out in a legal form. When I say legal form, I don't mean in the courts. I mean in our Republican form of government. If we're not putting the legal basis to this, you have no authority to do this, legislature, then they're going to get away with doing it because they'll say, well, we all agreed we could do it. And nobody knows how to counter that. The Constitution doesn't give you the power if you agree to do whatever you want. The Constitution lists the few things you can do. That's it. And only those things can you decide one way or the other whether we go to war or not. So anyway, my point is that I think when we really start looking at the party and whether it really represents us, we allow the parties to play our emotions and to pull us into this huge emotional whirlwind. Does that make sense, Jerry?
Yes.
And I think this is how
they do.
This is how they just get us embroiled in going fist to cuffs, even because it's very emotional. Anyway, so when we kind of look to the party, because. I think that there's some things that we need to talk about, and I think the platform is probably one of the primary things. What's your view on the platform regarding, the party system and so forth? Because I've laid it out there that I think that it's just filled with platitudes. It's these emotions that it's kind of like it's like dogs walking around marking their territory. There's these people that, I want to put my mark here on this. I want to make sure that we cover this because it's important to me. Because when you look at some emotion, you go, well, shoot, how did that get in there? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Well, it has their the Republican platform that was last approved in 2024. It has their beliefs in their preamble. Then it breaks down into their points on freedom, faith, and family and security. Mm-hmm. There are some points that they point out that they support, but it doesn't go into details or what should be done, what can't be done to a large extent. And it is more of a basis as opposed to specifics.
Right. And how dangerous is it when we can really narrow it down and make it succinct and make it very clear? It's got to be this. You have to have the authority or you can't do it. Wow. Go ahead.
It doesn't get into keeping the federal government within its enumerated powers.
Right, right. And so what it does do is it gives this ambiguity, because when you look at it, does the party member really support the platform? Well, yeah, theoretically, I support education, and I support, you know, some of this stuff, but I support this stuff too. And so it creates this level of ambiguity, because people really want things black and white. You want black and white, folks? Get rid of the emotions, get rid of the feelings, boil it down to the legitimate government, period. It's all based on enumerations. Again, Madison was the one that said government gets their authority from constitutions. And constitutions are empowered by we the people. We the people delegate power within that compact. And that then the government basically uses the authority we've given them in that compact to go do those things and only those things. Therefore, I think that, you know, if we simplified it, this is just my purview. Maybe I'm just simplifying it way too much. But I think that when you go into a court of law, it doesn't matter how you feel. It only matters on law and fact. And if your platform is based on law and fact, then it just simplifies it. It just does. Anyway, forgive me. Go ahead.
Well, part of what gets into it is the fact that makes an issue is the fact that, for one, when central committees vet their candidates, which they have only been doing on a large basis in the last recent elections, discussions within the whole committees, and just presentations, but actual vetting by a vetting committee with specific questions and all has not been done that much. And of recent, they are starting to do that.
Right.
And they don't hold their all their candidates to the platform or even mesh it out to exactly what are their stands on significant issues.
Right. So if it's difficult for people to get their arms around and articulate, then it makes it easier for bad people to slip through, and it makes it easier for bad people to continue doing bad things, because it's not simple. It's not based on law and fact. I'm just trying to create this, you know, this reinforcement to, if we simplify things so that there's just, you can't open that door and expect to be completely immune when the door says, do not open. You have no authority to open that door. The door exists. All these doors exist. As we come along and we understand this new technology of the internet, does the federal government have the authority to regulate the internet? Well, they created it, and then it got out into the private sector. Well, they can control their side of the internet, but can they control the internet? Not until we delegate it to them. So, this is how I think because you brought up vetting, I think vetting is a very important process. But I believe that the best way of vetting is actually a test. If you really want to know whether that person is going to be able to do their job, because what's their primary job? Their primary job is to support the Constitution, not to bring money home, not to, you know, compromise away everything. It's really about supporting and defending the Constitution. So let's test everybody on how well they understand the Constitution. You know, just like, do you have the plumber that comes in that says, hey, I like pipes. I think they're kind of fascinating. I like playing with them. Are you going to have that guy come and do your plumbing? Or do you want that person to have, you know, a specified level of skills that meet a criteria of a standard of today's plumbing in, you know, our technical world of plumbing as it is, or the electrician? This goes into all things. I mean, when you go and you look for a doctor to do, you know, heart surgery on you, you've got this referral to go to these different groups. Do you just pick the guy that just came in? No. You pick the guy that's, you know, won the battle. You pick the guy that is the best. We don't pick the worst. So I believe that if you really wanted to vet, and I don't know, this is just a suggestion. What do you think about this, Jerry?
Go ahead.
If you wanted to ask a question, it's okay.
Yeah, well, a lot of times we have candidates who already are in office and they're being vetted for being a candidate for their reelection, and a lot of times the party does not look at their voting record. We've had far too many legislators who have gone and campaigned with the citizens of their district, making statements of various positions and all, win the favor of their constituents and do get elected, and then they go to Jeff City and they vote in a different direction, which they right. haven't stated to their
right.
Constituents.
Right. Okay, so tell me what you think about this, because I believe that if you're going into a legislative position, you should pass a constitutional test that would challenge you as a legislator. In other words, you need to understand, you know, what enumerations are within the Constitution, in the state Constitution, that allows you to make law on. Only these things. In other words, you should be able to identify the few things that have been delegated to the state constitution that the state legislature has the authority to create law on. A good case in point, they don't have the authority to create law on labor. They don't have the authority to establish a minimum wage, period. You know, these types of things regarding labor. Same thing with housing. Same thing with the environment. So when you list and you say, okay, what are the things that, so you need to list, this is your test, you need to list, if you're a legislator, you need to give us a list of what are the things you can create laws on. And if you work through this whole scenario where they get tested on what they can do, what they shouldn't do, what, you know, how to act with, you know, federal money, federal things coming in, all of these different things that are within this test, then they get into office and they introduce a bill that is going to create a law that is not within those categories that you tested them on, then you can actually immediately challenge them to say, you already knew based on this test that you could only create laws on these things. You're bringing in a law regarding education, which is not within the enumerated objects in our state constitution or whatever it is. And then therefore, we're challenging you to remove you because you have literally violated your oath, because your job is to support the Constitution, not create laws that undermine it. That makes sense, right?
Yeah, and that's not what happens in some cases in Missouri. We've recently passed what's being called the Billionaire Bailout Bill,
okay,
which is giving benefits to the team owners for the Kansas City Royals and Kansas City Chiefs. And they're in the Constitution, it specifically says that you cannot benefit a particular group or people, and yet that's exactly what's being done. And they knew in advance, they know it's unconstitutional, and they do it anyway.
Uh-huh, okay.
And nobody holds them accountable, at least prior to the election.
Right. And yet they still do these things. And so my point is, and actually Jefferson was the one that said this, and I think that this gets to the heart of everything. Ignorance of the law is no excuse in any country. If it were, the laws would lose their effect because it can always be pretended. And therefore, if everybody was forced, at least our lawmakers, because I'm going to say this, if you create the test, and this is the beautiful thing about vetting too, if we use a test for vetting, to me, I believe it becomes the real no-brainer. I believe America becomes a little smarter in what their elected officials are supposed to be doing. And I say this because how many people understand medicine, even though they've never taken a class in biology and these types of things? Because we actually go in, we understand their job, and we actually start challenging the way our doctors do their job. Because we have had to educate ourselves because it affects us directly. Now, if we actually started having tests on our, it's the same thing with plumbing. It's the same thing with any of these skills, whether they be skills or sciences, because politics is really a science. And so it's based on laws. I mean, do they have the authority to do these things and so forth? Just like science is based on laws. So when we look at a test, I would see how the politician would basically pass this test, and we would promulgate that test so that all the voters would see it. And every voter would actually see how each of the candidates cast their votes or cast, you know, how they answered their questions. I say we open up, you know, the performance of the candidate so that the voters can see how smart they are in understanding the government that they're asking to get in and be a part of and in serving us. And I will tell you that the voters would become smart on this stuff because they're seeing the tests and they're seeing the few things that they can actually do in the state and all everything else that's not listed there they can't do. All of a sudden, we have a bunch of people that says, hold on here. You're creating housing regulations, and you don't have the authority to do that. It opens up this can of worms. So this is one of the reasons why we kind of I created a concept of a Bill of Rights, for the 21st century. And forgive me for doing this, and I'm stealing your valuable time because we really are running out. So I'm going to have to bring you back. And so in the next comeback, I will, you know, try to stop swimming in this rat hole. But a couple of years ago when I was working with Paul, I created this thing called a Bill of Rights for the 21st Century. Years before, became, you know, kind of very painfully aware that the Bill of Rights was the real problem of why we the people became ignorant on our Constitution. We only cared about our rights. We didn't care about the little things that we actually delegated the government the power to do. And instead of keeping track of what they could do, we only made sure that they couldn't do these things to us, which is why they're doing all the things they are doing to us. So the point is to force people to start understanding what these things are by creating these types of, by mandating tests. We have a test for a veterinarian. We have a test for a dog catcher. But we don't have a test for the guys that are going to go in and create a law that's telling us we all have to stop, you know, in these increments for the flow of traffic. I mean, these guys are affecting our everyday lives. They should be tested to prove that they're going to stay constrained within those powers delegated. And so I believe that through this Bill of Rights, this concept of helping everybody become educated, more literate we are on the Constitution, the better our government will serve us. Because now, and protect our liberty. And so we need a Bill of Rights that actually helps everybody understand what government has the power to do, which is probably the biggest secret, when it's not even a secret because it's listed. If it's not listed, I mean, this is how they went through the ratification debates. Look, if it's not here in the Constitution, they can't meddle with it. And people said, well, what about prayer? The response was, do you see prayer listed? They can't be the religion, prayer, it doesn't matter. It's not listed. They can't meddle with that. And they went off and created the Bill of Rights so that everybody felt better that they actually excluded it. Instead of living and moving forward with this idea that if it's not listed, they can't meddle with it. And if you see what I just said at the very beginning, how everybody's been so concerned about their rights and not understanding what they can't do, they figured out the things that aren't covered by the Bill of Rights they can get away with. And that's how they've done this. Because we were way too focused on what they couldn't do to us instead of understanding the only things that they could do.
Yeah, in Missouri, that is actually a big deal because they intentionally want to get around the constrictions that are specified in the Missouri Constitution. And they knowingly develop ways to skirt those laws, saying that, well, it doesn't say that we can't do that, so I guess we can.
Right. Right. So
that's not how to run a government and respect the Constitution and the citizens' rights.
Okay, so one of the things I probably did, and I didn't mean to do this, but if we don't put it out there, then sometimes it just becomes a trap. And so I wanted to, you know, give you this idea on a platform, because if we start recognizing the trappings, the platform is a trapping. When we allow our feelings to get injected into government, we've created this this little vestibule of bad energy, because emotions are not good energy. Energy that is of law and fact is good energy because it's not destructive. But emotions, I mean, wars are fought over emotions. You know, I hate you. I love you. Those types of things to where we, you know, go to blows with because that's so passionate. I believe that if we, you know, cleaned up the platform, I believe if we started doing these tests, I'm just throwing this out here, that I believe, and as a matter of fact, if you go back to that pledge, some of this stuff I kind of alluded to in that pledge that you signed. And so we want people to become literate. The Constitution is not a rocket science thing. It's, you know, there's very few things they can do. I think any person could actually create the list of the few things the federal government can do and actually create a list of what your state could do. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. You just have to take some time to read the Constitution and create the lists. And then once you've done that, you have basically created the box of government, because at the federal level, this is their box. They can't do anything to get out of that. If they do, they're in violation of their oath and they need to be removed. They're the same thing at the state government. It's a beautiful thing, understanding and having this kind of clarity. So with that, my apologies for you know, taking all this time. But what we'd like to do is we'll have you right back. We'll have you back next week. And I'll allow you to kind of, because I think you need to kind of walk through where you were going on the Uniparty and do the summation of all of that and then start talking about these elephants in the room, because I think that's what's important. I'm only just trying to help. And, folks, if you remember, that's my motto. I am G.R. Mobley. I'm here to help, and I'm not from the government. Thank you again for your time, and we'll have you back if that's okay with you.
Yes. Thank you very much, GR.
Awesome. Thank you so much, folks. We will be right back after this. So let me be clear as we lay this out moving forward, because we're obviously going to have Jerry back. We want to get into more detail so that you can understand. Technically, folks, you got to understand one thing. We didn't even cover this yet, that there are literally two parties here. And when I say two parties, two Republican parties. There's the Republican Party in power that does not represent the party itself. The party itself has taken on the job of becoming the facade in running interference for those in power. As long as those are Republicans in name, then it kind of makes the Republican Party look good. Oh, well, you look at this, we got a Republican body government here. This is good, better than Democrat. when the reality is the Republican Party, the grassroots, not the people in power, but the grassroots side of this, is not holding them accountable. They don't care about protecting their brand. They are protecting the facade. Now, nobody wants to admit this, but this is the truth. And I see this, and I especially see this in Washington, because until we actually start demanding compliance and full accountability of our public servants, we are going to be tossed to and fro. That's the problem. So whether we're adult enough to deal with this, whether we can actually start taking this on, and this is why we need to start taking this not only to the people, we need to take this to businesses. We need to help businesses understand that they can't just support party, and they shouldn't support party. The party's a part of the problem. They need to support candidates that are taking a stand in supporting the Constitution, not the party. I'm telling you, friends, if I had an option of a person that had a pretty decent, business integrity and so forth, maybe they committed adultery. Maybe, you know, they're not the most moral person. Maybe they're not Christian. Maybe they've never committed adultery, but they just don't go to church. They've become secular. But they are hardcore constitutionalists, and they're champions of that. And if the voters basically vote them in because of that, and if we, the voters, demand our public servants be constitutional, then the rest of the stuff is not important. The only thing that becomes important and paramount, and I mean, you know, massive urgency, when all of a sudden this guy we elected actually starts going back on what they say and start doing things that we know is unconstitutional, and they're selling us under, under the water. They're basically burying us to government regulations and all kinds of things that are all unconstitutional. In other words, the head of tyranny starts to rise. We have to hold them accountable. And it doesn't matter whether that's a church-going man or a non-church-going man. The responsibility is the same. The real problem is we believe that the church-going man is going to be the good guy that's going to do what he's supposed to do, and he doesn't. And that's because you and we, the people, are lazy in holding them accountable. We have a job to do in the self-governing system. As a people, we must hold public servants accountable to their oath, to the entire Constitution, not just this little part, just about voter integrity, just about, you know, abortion, just about gun rights. No, that has to stop, and it has to stop today. Quit allowing these organizations to manipulate you. Quit allowing anything to start poking its head into our chambers and saying, hey, I'm a good guy because you can at least keep your guns. We want all of our liberties. We want all of the law fulfilled and complied to in its fullest capacity. And with that, folks, if we unite on that, if that's the litmus test we all carry in our pocket and hold every public servant accountable to that Constitution, to this very specific Constitution, we are going to create a wake of bad politicians and destruction of bad government behind us. And we will be moving forward into the 21st century. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review?
because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.